Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 455 for December 8th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
To achieve an average score across every single judge is really quite difficult.
The first week of December traditionally means the announcement of the annual Malt Maniacs Whiskey Awards. Keith Wood and Oliver Klimek of the Maniacs will join me to discuss this year's winners on Whiskey Cast in depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, my notes for this year's Best Daily Dram from the Malt Maniacs Awards, all on this week's Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's get started with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. While there still are no arrests in the Pappy Van Winkle thefts from Buffalo Trace Distillery, there are a lot more leads coming in. Monday, Franklin County Sheriff Pat Melton announced a $10,000 reward for information leading to an arrest and a conviction in the case, and that led to a flood of tips from around the country. Melton still believes it was an inside job. His deputies have interviewed more than 100 Buffalo Trace workers. By the way, those workers got a week's advance notice of the reward. $9,000 was posted by an anonymous donor, while Bluegrass Crime Stoppers put up the remaining $1,000. Whiskey Magazine named its Scottish Icons of Whiskey winners this week at a luncheon in Edinburgh. Diageo was named Distiller of the Year, while Ardbeg's Mickey Heads was named Distillery Manager of the Year. William Grant & Sons took Brand Innovator of the Year honors, and the company's David Mayer of the Balvenie was named Whiskey Ambassador of the Year. Lefroig Distillery won Visitor Attraction of the Year, while Highland Park's Pat Retson was named Visitor Center Manager of the Year. Among retailers, Gordon & McPhail's store in Elgin was named the Single Store Retailer of the Year, Drinkmonger the Multiple Store Retailer, and RoyalMileWhiskies.com the Online Retailer of the Year. All of the winners will go up against the U.S. Icons winners announced back in September and the World Whiskey Icons to be named this winter. The Global Icons of Whiskey winners will be announced in London next March. Glenmorangie's Caskmasters program is starting the third phase of voting now, with whiskey lovers invited to vote through January 6th on the packaging for the Caskmasters single malt that will be released next autumn. Meanwhile, there's an online auction underway now for one of the 50 rare bottles of Glenmorangie 1963, discovered earlier this year. The auction will benefit American Forests, a group that helps preserve and expand forest lands. Glenmorangie's David Blackmore told me this week that while skeptics may not believe the whiskey was just found, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it's interesting. People might not believe that we find this stuff from time to time, but believe me, over the years, maybe we haven't been quite as organized an industry as you might think. And we found these 50 bottles of Glenmorangie 1963 that were first released back in 1987. 50 bottles, for whatever reason, stuck away in a corner of our warehouse. I think probably they came, you know, to our attention when we moved facilities from our old Broxburn site to our new bottling site. And the world's first wood finished single malt whiskey. So quite exciting.
And what was it finished in?
Oloroso sherry casks for almost 2 years.
Now, tell me about the one bottle that's going to be auctioned off for charity, because these other 49 bottles are pretty much gone now, right?
Yeah, we're pretty much at the end of them. We have reserved one bottle that we're auctioning online on Charity Buzz, and all the proceeds go to a U.S. charity that's involved in the preservation of American woodlands, which we thought was very apt, considering we rely so much on American oak for our products.
Again, the auction benefits American Forests. You'll find a link to the Charity Buzz page at whiskeycast.com. The auction ends this Friday, December 13th. The high bid at press time is $3,500. New whiskeys out this week. Ballantine's is out with the latest entry in the flavored whiskey category. Most flavored whiskies have focused on honey, spices, or maple so far, but Ballantine's looked to Brazil for its inspiration. Ballantine's Brazil is infused with Brazilian lime peel. It'll be released first in Europe, specifically the Netherlands and the Czech Republic, with a global launch planned for February. In a similar vein, George Dickel is joining the white whiskey wars with George Dickel No. 1 Foundation Recipe. It's the basic white dog spirit that comes off the still and goes into barrels for the Dickel Tennessee whiskeys, but goes through charcoal filtering before it's diluted to the bottling strength of 45.5% ABV. And by the way, it is labeled as a corn whiskey without the E and without the Tennessee. That's because Tennessee lawmakers passed legislation earlier this year that bans the state's distillers from using the Tennessee whiskey designation on any spirit that doesn't meet the federal standards for bourbon, which includes the use of new charred oak barrels for maturation. Now, Little Rock is not that far away from Dickel, and Phil Brandon's Rocktown Distillery has released the first-ever Arkansas rye whiskey. It's even more unusual because Phil had the rye grown for the distillery on a farm near Little Rock. I'll have tasting notes for it soon at WhiskeyCast.com. Meanwhile, Billy Walker has released the second Glenglassaugh expression since he and his partners acquired the distillery earlier this year. It's a 40-year-old single malt, and while just 800 bottles will be available at first, it will be a permanent part of the Glenglassaugh range going forward. Billy also released 9 more single-cask bottlings from Glendronach, ranging from 18 to 41 years old. Earlier this year, the Macallan released M, a limited-edition single malt in collaboration with Lalique and designer Fabian Baron. This week, M arrived in New York City, complete with a 6-liter version of the Fabian Baron-designed decanter. There are only 4 of those 6-liter decanters, and they're the largest decanters Lalique has ever made. I caught up with the Macallan's David Cox to discuss M, as well as the $160 million distillery expansion announced last week.
This is a new whiskey. It's right at the summit of a new range that has been put together by our great whiskey maker Bob Dalgano at the Macallan. And unlike the traditional way of segmenting different bottlings by putting an age statement on it, this is making or celebrating, if you like, the range of natural color in Macallan, from the quite sort of light gold colors through to the really rich, deep, dark, reddish, dark brown colors that we get, almost like rich rosewood. And we're very proud, as you probably know at Macallan, of the fact that all our bottlings are natural color. And Bob thought it'd be great to come up with an idea to celebrate, if you like, this range of color by coming up with a new range of whiskies, so that when you look at the whiskey and the color of that whiskey, that actually gives you the clue as to the character of it based on the cask that he's chosen. So the M decanter, which we're launching tonight, is at the very summit of that range. It contains whiskey from 1940. It's some of our oldest and rarest casks. They're all first fill Spanish oak sherry casks, and very much in the traditional style of Macallan. So it's a great moment for us, and the decanter itself is utterly fabulous, designed by Fabien Baron and made by our good friends and partners at Lalique in France.
And this is just the latest in that partnership with Lalique, right?
It is indeed. We started with them back in 2005. We're on our 5th in the series of 6, which celebrate each of our 6 pillars. So it's a partnership that's worked incredibly well for us. We get on well as business colleagues, as partners, but we just really respect the craftsmanship of their work. And they've always produced the most beautiful bespoke designs for us, which have been worthy of holding the very old, rare, fine Macallan whiskies that we've been putting in them over the years.
And let's go into more specifics on the whiskey itself in this one. You say there are whiskeys that are going back to the 1940s here. Obviously, this has no age statement, so I'm assuming there are some very much younger whiskeys in. But tell me about the character for this one.
It's very much, I suppose, what we would call today the traditional Macallan character. So it's driven by Spanish oak. So you're getting that on the nose, you're getting those the typical dried fruits, the orange citrus, a little bit of spiciness, but also vanilla as well. On the mouth, you get much more of the spices, the tannins that come through from Spanish oak, and slightly dry, slightly woody notes, but a lovely long warming finish. So I guess if you had to sum up an expression which is typifies, if you like, the traditional style of Macallan, this would be very much it. You're absolutely right. He did choose a range of casks, the earliest distillation being 1940, the youngest cask being 1991, I think. And the idea is that the M decanter will continue year by year, but each year he will put together a slightly different vatting of Macallan from a different range of whiskies. So there'll be numbered decanters, but anybody buying any particular decanter will be able to see by looking underneath what year it comes from and what number that decanter is of the limited number produced for that year. So it's a very special piece for us.
The last time you and I talked was about 3 years ago, the last time there was a big charity auction of one of the Macallan Leek decanters, the Cire Perdue cask at Sotheby's here in New York. When I walked through the room, I noticed a very large version of the M decanter that, when we were talking before, you mentioned was the one of the largest Leek has ever created, the four largest, in fact, for the M series. Tell me about the auction that you're doing in Hong Kong with one of these next month.
Certainly. You're absolutely right. This is the largest decanter Leek have ever made in their history. Technically, it was a big challenge for them. We've only produced four of them. One is here in the United States. Three have gone to the Asia Pacific region. And one of them, it's actually the only one which has got the signatures of Silvio Dents, the owner and chief executive of Leek, Fabien Baron, who designed the decanter, and Bob Delgano, a whiskey maker. Their signatures are on the bottom of that decanter, etched into the actual crystal. It's going to be auctioned by Sotheby's on January the 18th in Hong Kong, and all the proceeds will go to Hong Kong charities, one of which will be the Hong Kong Cancer Fund. So we're really hoping for a great turnout on the day or the night, whatever time they happen to hold it. And we hope, obviously, it goes for a great price because it's going to be a great cause. And it is such a rare and special decanter. It's very, very special.
The last time you did one of these, it set a Guinness record at $460,000. Can you break it this time?
Well, we would absolutely be over the moon if it does. But we have to be realistic. You never know what's going to happen on the day. But I just hope there will be some collectors out there or some great aficionados in Macallan who see it for what it is. It's a very rare piece. It contains wonderful whiskey, and the causes are hopefully close to anybody's heart. So let's hope we get a really good price on the night.
Let's turn to the other major topic at the Macallan, which is the distillery expansion. Approximately $160 million announced last week, approximately 100 million pounds. We obviously know that the distillery has been running at full tilt for years and barely able to keep up with capacity. Why make the move now to essentially a three-year project or a four-year project almost to build an all-new distillery?
Well, we've been thinking for a while about what our forecasts mean in terms of production. I'm delighted to say Macallan has been growing strongly around the world, particularly driven by Asia Pacific in the last few years, and indeed North America. We could have made the decision to add on capacity to the existing distillery, but we felt that given the progress of Macallan over the last 10 to 12 years, that this was a chance to do something really transformational. To build a new iconic structure in Speyside, and drawing some of that inspiration on some of the great wineries that have been produced by great architects in the last few years. So we put it out to competition, architectural competition, and one of the greatest British architects and probably one of the greatest architects in the world, Richard Rogers and his partners, won the commission. And they've come up with an absolutely fascinating design, which I think says as much about Macallan and our spirit, if you like, of innovation, as it does about our obsession, if you like, with doing things in a traditional way as well. So it's a really exciting moment. It's a crossroads, I think, really, for the brand. But it's going to be the most wonderful distillery to come and visit. It will incorporate a new visitor center. And I think it'll become a real talking point in the Scotch whisky industry. But most importantly for us, it says something about the Macallan and how, in a way, it's coming of age.
The plan is to mothball the current distillery once the new one comes online, correct?
That's the current plan. We'll keep probably most of the elements of the old distillery and then see how it goes. It would always give us extra capacity if we needed it after the new distillery comes on stream. But it also gives us the ability to experiment with things as well. So that certainly is the plan at the moment, Mark, yeah.
And the plan right now, as I understand it, assuming you get planning permission, would be to start late 2014, completion by 2017, right?
That's correct. We're hoping to start trials of new spirit towards the end of 2016. And then all being well, once all the inevitable glitches are ironed out, we would like to be commercially producing the first spirit from the distillery in the spring of 2017.
Which realistically means 2029 before we'd see it in a bottle.
Yeah, you'll still be young, Mark, and I'll try and be young in spirit, so I'm looking forward to it, and you should be too.
I'll have my tasting notes for the Macallan M in just a few minutes. And finally...
I love scotch. I love scotch. Scotchy, scotch, scotch. Here it goes down into my belly.
Yes, that's the infamous Ron Burgundy line from the movie Anchorman. And with Anchorman 2 set to come out later this month, there's a scotch-related tie-in hitting the market. Most movies have action figures. Anchorman gets its own scotch. Riviera Imports has released Ron Burgundy Whiskey, Great Odin's Raven, in the U.S. and Canada. It'll be out in the U.K. December 20th. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, continuing the Caskmasters project. You've helped us choose the whiskey, and you've helped us choose the name. Next, help us choose the packaging. Sign up online at glenmorangie.com.
Congratulations to Jamie Cobley of Ashland, Massachusetts, November's winner in our monthly drawing for registered members at whiskeycast.com. He'll be receiving a print from the WhiskeyCast photo gallery. If you'd like to be eligible for this month's drawing, all you have to do is register at whiskeycast.com. By the way, there are still a few days left to order gallery prints and get them delivered in time for Christmas. The deadline for North American orders is December 15th. That's also the deadline for free shipping on any order of $150 or more. I'm also donating 20% of all sales through the end of the year to the ALS Association's Parker Beams Promise of Hope Fund. You'll find the gallery in the pub section at WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Had a lot of comments on last week's story of the 2014 launch of Mortlach as a single malt brand. Chuck Epperson emailed this note. I just finished listening to episode 454. Please tell me you videoed the Mortlach interview. I've just got to see their operation. Unfortunately, I was too busy scrambling around recording the audio segment in order to shoot any video. But if I get back to Mortlach, I'll try to get Sean Phillips to take me around for a video tour. Of course, the number one spirit still at Mortlach is named the Wee Witchy. Fab Arm of Toulouse, France, suggested on our Facebook page that perhaps its counterpart in the new Mortlach stillhouse ought to be named the Wee Wizard. And John Birkbeck of Cardiff, Wales, posted this tweet. Really enjoyable episode this week. Loved the audio tour, but still not exactly sure on Mortlach's distilling process. Well, I've got to admit, I'm not sure I understand it completely either, and I went back to listen to Sean's explanation several times. If you have a question, a suggestion, or something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com, or you can email me directly. My email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. And this week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. An engraved bottle of Johnny Walker Blue Label might just be the perfect gift for someone on your list. Check with your local retailer for engraving options or visit johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Thought I'd focus on some of the whiskey events coming up on New Year's Eve. First off, the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's UK chapter has a Hogmanay dinner and a New Year's Eve party at the Queen Street Members Rooms in Edinburgh, along with a tasting at the Vaults in Leith. The Kierberg Whiskey Museum in Kern, Germany has a Hogmanay tasting that night. The Flatiron Room in New York City has a New Year's Eve whiskey dinner planned. And while the ball drops in Times Square to mark the arrival of the new year in New York City, they'll be dropping a whiskey barrel at Center Park in Chattanooga, Tennessee at midnight. The party is being sponsored by the Chattanooga Whiskey Company. If you have an event you'd like to add to the calendar, just use the contact form at whiskeycast.com. The calendar of events is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Liam O'Leary, distiller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
My wife, she has a cousin, a priest, up in Ballyfermot in Dublin. And he comes down every year, especially if Cocker in the All-Ireland final, you know. He makes it his business every year to come down for, by the way, to watch the match. But I know he comes down because he gets a couple of bottles of Redbreast off me every year, you know. And we have a few Redbreasts, and we'd hopefully Cocker will be in the All-Ireland final like they were last year. And he's talking about coming again this year anyway, because I think the priests like their Redbreast anyway, nice and smooth, and you know, not too harsh. It's a lovely smooth whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
This week, the Malt Maniacs announced the results of the 11th annual Malt Maniacs Awards. If you're not familiar with the Maniacs, it's a group of serious whiskey lovers from around the world based at maltmaniacs.net. I've been a member of the group for the last 5 years, and the one time I served as a judge in the competition back in 2008 was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done whiskey-wise. This year, the judge has selected a 1973 Karuizawa single cask bottling from Number One Drinks Company as the highest scoring whiskey from nearly 200 entries. For this week's WhiskeyCast In-Depth, Maniacs Keith Wood and Oliver Klimek join me by phone from Germany. Guys, first of all, let's talk about the competition overall. Keith, you ran essentially all the logistics again this year. Tell me what went into putting this year's competition together in terms of the number of judges, getting samples out around the world. How did it go?
Well, as usual, we had a few hiccups. The original plan was for 12 judges, and pretty much as happened last year, two of the judges just couldn't make it in the end. They had problems with their diaries, their work diaries, so we were down to 10 judges. But to be quite honest, my personal optimum number for judges is around the 10 to 12 mark, so no problem with that. Yes, I ran all of the logistics again. Things, as usual, when I put out the request for invitations, the first information to the trade, to all the distilleries and bottlers, we got an immediate response, but then, as usual, because of the summer holiday time, things just dried up during August, and I was sitting here waiting for the entries to arrive, and when they did, it was like opening the floodgates. It was literally the last 2 weeks before deadline, and lorries were queuing up in the street to deliver in the end.
And I want to ask how many we wound up with in the end, because that's a number that never gets disclosed. But was it more or less than last year?
It was more than last year, and I will say we were really getting very close to our 200 limit.
So this was an interesting competition in terms of the numbers at the end. And Oliver, I know you were basically in charge of the number crunching, right?
Yes, I'm collecting the scores for the scorecard. I mean, actually, Keith collected the scores, but then sent them to me. And I had prepared the scorecard with the help of a couple of other friends, with Robert and David.
What struck me as the most interesting was that while the number of gold medals has always been fairly low, it's usually been somewhere between 9 to 12 out of the overall entire entry field, this year there were only 4 gold medalists, right?
Yes, it was a bit surprising, but it wasn't the all-time low. I think we had one competition a few years ago where we only had 3 gold medals, so it's not really the lowest number, but it is quite a drop from last year, that's true, yes.
And let's explain the criteria for getting a medal. It's 90 and above average score from all the judges in the field to get a gold medal. And again, only four got it this year. What are the criteria for the silver and bronze medals?
Yes, silver medals is from 85 to 89 points, and bronze medals from 80 to 84 points.
And getting 10 judges to agree on anything is difficult, but getting them all to agree on average scores above 80 is even more so, right, Keith?
That's correct, Mark. Everybody thinks that, oh, it's easy to win a medal, but that's really seriously not the case. To achieve an average score across every single judge is really quite difficult. And again, although there are some numbers that are not disclosed, I will say that this year there were more entries that didn't win a medal than in any of the previous years that I've been involved with.
And just for clarification, the names of those whiskies that are not awarded medals are not published on the website or even released, right?
No, they're not on the website, but the scores will be entered into the Mod Monitor, but then it can also be mixed up with scores from other judges or from other maniacs who have not been judging in the awards. But they will not be published on the website themselves. No.
And before we start talking about the winners, let's answer a question that comes up every year from certain critics of the competition. How is this judged? We know that all the maniacs, or at least the maniacs that are judging, the 10 in this case out of about 30 maniacs, all judge blindly, all judge samples that are numbered, but they each have their own individual method for judging, correct?
That's correct. We don't impose any specific judging criteria. I mean, at the end of the day, our judges, although we only allow our amateur whiskey enthusiasts within the Maniacs to be judges for the Malt Maniac Awards, these are people who are serious whiskey enthusiasts. They're specialists in their own right. Many of them have already judged hundreds or in some cases thousands of whiskies on the Malt Monitor. So we're not talking about inexperienced judges. Each already has their own system of judging, their own methods that are tried and tested. So we don't try and limit their own tried and tested methods.
And let's just explain what we mean by amateur and professional. The amateurs in the group are not necessarily amateur whiskey lovers, as you've suggested. Serge Valentin of the Whiskey Fun website falls into that category. I do not, as a full-time whiskey writer, nor does Dave Broom, Charlie McLean, Martin Nouet, or those of us who actually write about whiskey and make a living from it. So that's what we mean by professionals. There are no industry professionals in the Maniacs, but there are those of us who do make our livings from writing about whiskey and doing radio shows about whiskey, and therefore we do not judge in this competition. I have not judged for a number of years, but that's what we're talking about in this case. It's not just amateurs in terms of amateur talent, but amateur in its purest form, which means a connoisseur or a lover of something, and they're doing it for their passion.
That's correct.
Now that we've got all the disclaimers and all the legalese and all the other stuff out of the way, let's talk about the awards. Once again, only four, but this was a change of pace this year. Last couple of years, Glendronach took the top honors with the highest score for a couple of whiskeys. This year, it was another Karuizawa, which has won a couple of times in the past, right, guys?
That's correct. Yep. I'm just actually looking right now at the history, and Glendronach have won the Ultra Premium Award for the last 3 years, and in 2009, it was also a Karuizawa. So they're back again. They've knocked Glendronach off the peak this year. They're back again, and what magnificent way to do it as well! That was a truly magnificent, a fantastic whiskey.
And the other whiskeys in the Supreme Winners, because what you guys do also is divide it by ultra premium, premium, and daily dram categories, and there's a Supreme Winner in each of those two categories as well. Cavalan from Taiwan took the premium category Supreme Winner, right?
Yes, I think that was pretty amazing. especially for a premium jam to rank second in the overall average score. And I mean, the Cavalan had a very strong showing anyway with three whiskies in the top.
Keith?
I'm just looking at the list now. Cavalan won the one award and one gold medal with the Supreme in the premium. Actually, more interesting is in the overall scores. In the top 15 whiskies altogether, there were two Cavalan in the top 15, and I'm sure we'll come on to this, but there were also two Amrut.
No, all Amrut had 88 points or more, so it was a very strong result.
So what about Cavalan and Amrut sort of made them stand out to the maniacs this year?
I think it was just the overall style of whiskey. And there is no denying the quality of both of those distilleries now. It's not long ago we were talking about those distilleries, new kids on the block and good whiskies, but they've still got a way to go. That's no longer the case. They have truly arrived now. They're producing some fantastic bottlings. And quite interestingly, the two Amruts there were actually both independent bottlings as well. Marvelous, marvelous whiskies.
And let's talk about the fact that only one single malt Scotch actually won a gold medal. The Glenfarclas Family Casks from 1989 was one of the four gold medalists, but that was the only one from Scotland. The fourth was a Yamazaki bottling for La Maison de Whisky in Paris.
That's correct. But it sounds as though the Scottish distilleries have been a little bit sidelined, but I'm just looking at the scores there now, and this particular Glenfarclas, out of 10 judges, 6 of them awarded it gold medal status. And that is fantastic scoring. It really is.
And even still, it barely squeaked in with a 90-point average, even with 6 medalists, with 6 judges giving it a gold medal. It barely made it. The high score was 91, by the way. You have to get a 90 to get a gold.
That's right. That's right.
I'm looking through the list, and let's go through the other premium award winner. That was another interesting one in the Daily Dram category, the Aberlour Abuna, batch number 45. I had the chance to try this one this week, and I was really impressed with it, but this is a really good one.
Yes, Aberlour Abuna has had great results also in the previous awards. I think last year it won the same Supreme winner in the Daily Dram category with another batch. I think it was 39, so really pretty good consistency. And yes, when it's a good batch, it's excellent. There are some batches that are not so good, but this one is very good again.
Mark, it's interesting that you ask about the Daily Dram category there. We're still looking at the scores for this year. One thing that really surprised me was the quality of the whiskies in the Daily Dram category. As the listeners will know, our Daily Dram category has a limit of a retail price of around £45 or €50. And every year we discuss, while the prices are going up, should we really increase that limit? And we remain quite strict and say, no, let's keep it at €50. And it really is amazing. And this year has proven what fantastic quality you can still get for your money in that range.
Let's go through a couple of the other ones in that category. And by the way, just for the translation, that's about $67 U.S. The Benriach 10-Year-Old Curiositas was an 86-pointer. That came in second among the Daily Drams. A Glendronic 10-Year-Old, the Glenlivet 16-Year-Old from Signatory, a Springbank 12-Year-Old Cask Strength, another Glendronic 10-Year-old, a couple of those for official bottlings for various stores. And the Talisker 10-Year-Old also came in with an 86, which was just barely above bronze medal status. It wound up winning a silver medal, but those are all very interesting whiskeys that are actually at a reasonable price.
Absolutely. When you refer to the Talisker, I felt that a few years ago, it really wasn't what it used to be. I felt it lacked some of that old Talisker, perhaps the pepperiness, that character of Talisker. But for the last 2 to 3 years, that seems to be coming back again. And the quality of Talisker in particular, I felt as really, really improved over the last 2 or 3 years. And I'm glad to see it doing so well. It is a really, really good whiskey.
And we won't go through all of the various award winners, because in addition to gold medals, there are awards in various categories. Just to run through them, the Supreme winner, which is the highest scorer in each of the Ultra Premium, Premium, and Daily Dram categories. But there are also awards for the best sherry cask whiskey, the best peated whiskey, the best natural casks whiskey. And then the one I want you to explain is the Thumbs Up Award, because that's the one that always confuses a lot of folks. What do we mean by the Thumbs Up Award?
Basically, it is the Malt Maniacs acknowledging something specific about a whiskey. It can be quality. Of course, it must be quality related in some way, but it can also be, this is a really good everyday drinking whiskey for a great price. So rather than just taking points into consideration, it's like a comparison or a formula between points and value for money.
And the three Thumbs Up Awards in the Ultra Premium category, the Teeling 21-Year-Old Vintage Reserve from the Teeling Whiskey Company in Ireland. In the Premium category, it was the Celtic Connection Islay Sauterne Finish, distilled in 1999, bottled in 2013 from Jean Donnet's Celtic Whiskey Company. And in the Daily Dram category, it was the Benriach 10-Year-Old Curiositas.
Oliver?
Yes. I think for me, the Teeling 21-Year-Old was probably the biggest surprise of the awards. I mean, it was a new company, and then they have such a great whiskey. It really surprised me. And we had quite a lot of submissions, actually, from Ireland, and altogether they did quite well. And that a new company like Teeling, as I said, got such a good result really was the biggest surprise of the awards for me.
Any other surprises in the awards this year? There was one I saw, the highest ranking grain whiskey, a 50-year-old North British bottling from Douglas Lang, came extremely close to winning a gold medal. And we don't see many single grain whiskeys getting that high in the ratings, usually.
We don't usually know, but there again, there are not so many of those knocking around. I mean, they're not on every single shelf. They're hard to come by. Most of those do go into the blended whiskey, but occasionally we do see a single grain being bottled and of that kind of age. That style of whiskey is one of my personal favorites. It really is. When you get a very good old single grain, then you've got a whiskey that I personally think is very often worthy of gold medal status. And that was the case here. That was a magnificent whiskey. And as you say, it was literally, I'm just looking now, 89 points. It was just 1 point away from gold medal. And in fact, four of the judges scored it on gold medal status.
And actually, it was my personal favorite of the awards.
What did you like about that one, Oliver?
Well, it's difficult to say. It was just the perfect grain whiskey for me. It's the perfect balance of the rich fruitiness and the wood, not too strong as you might expect from a 50-year-old whiskey. It was everything just perfectly balanced, and it's just a pure delight.
Any other surprises in the competition this year? Anything else that stood out that we wouldn't have normally considered?
Well, I wouldn't say a surprise so much as something that stood out. When, as you know, as we've talked about, I organize the logistics. So I'm the first person who sees the entries. I take them from the various couriers that arrived. And it was quite obvious that this year we may not have quite so many very, very expensive whiskies. The ultra premium category of over 150 euros was healthy. It was again a great category. But my immediate attention was drawn back to the Daily Drams. Some of the whiskies we've already spoken about, the Aberlour, Abunad, the Batch 45, they're within the 50 euro limit. There were three different 10-year-old single cask Glendronach. And then on top of that, we've got things like the Benriach Curiositas, the Springbank 12-year CS, all of them managing to win awards. But I immediately realized that this was going to be a very exciting category this year. The competition within that category was exceptionally high.
And the thing that surprised me overall in the awards was that quite a number of very young whiskies did pretty well in overall. And we had a 9-year-old Tolila with 89 points. And then also, what is quite amazing, an Edredour from the Whiskey Exchange, 7-year-old, which fetched a solid silver medal. And then, of course, the Benriach 10-year-old Curiositas, also with the two awards it got.
May I just point out that, to my knowledge, this is the first time one single bottling of whiskey, one entry within the awards, has actually won two separate awards.
Please explain, because normally in past years, a whiskey can only win one medal and one award.
That has been a kind of unwritten rule, yes. But this year, the quality of that one, it won the Peated in Daily Drams without any question whatsoever. But when we were looking for candidates for the Sums Up Award, which I'm sure Oliver will speak about again in a minute, we just felt that the value for money for that quality just meant that it had to have the second award.
Oliver?
Yes, I absolutely agree with this.
If you look at the price of that whiskey, we certainly have a mid-European price of around 31 euros. And that is just stunning value for money.
One final point out of this. I notice when I look through the list that there are primarily a lot of independent bottlings that show up very high and show up throughout most of the medal winners. Did we see more independent bottlers entering this year, or did we just see a number of official distillery bottlings drop off?
To be honest, the Malt Maniac Awards has always been very popular with independent bottlers, so we always have a very high percentage. I think, again, we come back to the overall quality of those that make them stand out a little bit more this year, to be quite honest. So you notice them because they're doing so well at the moment.
You can find a complete list of medal and award winners along with the scores from each judge at maltmaniacs.net. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with one of the Supreme Award winners from the Malt Maniacs Awards. By sheer coincidence, I was part of an Aberlour Twitter tasting the other night that included the Aberlour Abuna Batch 45. It's bottled at 60.2% ABV. The nose is dry and sweet with oak and muted cinnamon, a whiff of smoke, licorice, and raisin notes. The taste is thick, oily, and powerful with licorice, caramel candy, and a chili powder spiciness that fades to reveal plums, raisins, and figs underneath. The finish is long and dry with plums, raisins, dark chocolate, and a hint of licorice. I'm scoring the Aberlour Abuna Batch 45 a 93. Next up, the Jack Daniel's Sinatra Select Edition. This one is now getting wider release after first being available only in travel retail. It uses smoke barrels with grooves cut into the inside of the staves in order to get more wood in contact with the whiskey. But those casks are then blended with traditional Jack Daniel's casks before bottling at 45% ABV. The nose has notes of oak, charcoal, caramel, dark chocolate, honey, and touches of allspice and clove. The taste has spicy touches of cinnamon, allspice, and clove, with honey and vanilla notes underneath. And the finish is long and rich, with slowly fading spices and a hint of bitter baking chocolate. Overall, it's a very well-balanced whiskey. I'm scoring the Jack Daniel's Sinatra Select a 90. Finally, let's look at the Macallan M. Now, at $4,500 a bottle, it had better be good. And it is. In fact, I think it's about as easy to drink as the Macallan 18. It's bottled at 44.5% ABV, and the nose has citrusy touches, especially some baked orange, along with fruitcake, dried apricots, ginger, and a hint of vanilla. The taste is thick and spicy with cinnamon, orange peel, toffee, dried apricots, and a touch of plum. It's very complex and well-balanced. And the finish is dry and sweet with a good texture and notes of orange peel and marmalade, raisins, and a hint of licorice. I'm scoring the Macallan M a 94. I've added these tasting notes to the free searchable list of nearly 1,100 different whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news and our calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast Photo Gallery, and our bookstore powered by Amazon.com for your holiday shopping, along with a complete archive of past episodes. You can follow me on Twitter at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.